cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Points up with his shot and Price made the save. Bouncing, pops out of the net. Price is down. He can't find the puck. They score! Matt Fraser has his first National Hockey League playoff goal.
Well, that's the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's the unsung unknown that quite often come up big, like Matt Fraser did the other night, the 1-0 overtime winner for the Boston Bruins over the Montreal Canadiens. We welcome you to Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Fan Sportsnet Radio Network. Gord Stellick joined by Brian Mures. Rick Natras away this weekend, so we'll Muresy talk the next couple hours about what's going on around the National Hockey League. Four series remaining. Eddie Olczyk will join us in a few minutes' time, but I'm trying to think of guys like, you know, Peter Klima came off the bench late that time way back when. Yeah. But guys in general that have been as unsung, unexpected heroes like Matt Fraser.
Not a bad first one to get, I'll tell you. I was actually at the game in Montreal, and to be back in an atmosphere like that in a playoff environment like Montreal, and wow, the fans, the atmosphere in the rink, and to kind of have that deflationary effect when a goal gets scored like that. But amazing that he could step off the ice, off the bench onto the ice and do that. And it's a really good one that he's going to remember for a long time, I think.
Well, one thing is, you look who's on there. I mean, it's him, Carl Soderberg. I mean, Claude Julien basically says to guys that are fourth line guys, yeah, whatever, you're part of the team, I'm going to put you out there early.
It was an interesting game, actually. I was pretty fascinated with how the lines were rolled and both teams. It was a real chess match, you know, going in 0-0. The guys, no one wanted to risk anything. There really weren't that many chances. You know, watching the goalies play, Carey Price and Rask were just, they were both on. Price was just amazing to see him, seeing everything like it was just a beach ball coming at him. And, you know, it's, you know that that ends up being the goal that's going to kind of, that's going to happen like that. It's going to be one you can't see and doesn't know where it is, and it just kind of pokes in and slides behind him. So,
yeah, you know, you won a Stanley Cup with the Colorado Avalanche, and you mentioned the atmosphere, the environment in Montreal, and you play all season for home ice advantage, but it doesn't statistically, it seems as even Steven, that as pumped as the home team gets, yeah, do they get nervous, and does it pump the visiting team?
Yeah, it's an interesting, because we in Colorado, was from the start of the year, was something that, you know, when they win the President's Trophy, so you can have home ice throughout, and it was an important thing for us, and in Game 7 against Jersey, we ended up winning, and I guess you could say it was a factor in helping us win that. But here now, some of the teams are, it's you lose home ice, you get it, and it's back, and then it's gone, and it's an interesting ebb and flow that goes as the playoff series goes. So we'll see what Montreal can do in Boston. Hopefully they can steal another one.
Well, we'll talk about those two games tonight. Got the Montreal Canadiens taking on the Boston Bruins, later on the Anaheim Ducks and the Los Angeles Kings. Our weekly visit covering the Minnesota-Chicago series, but of course covering the NHL for NBC and the Chicago Blackhawk broadcast crew. Eddie Olczyk joining us. And Eddie, it's Gord Stellick, Brian Muir, and always great having you on a Saturday as well. And we're chatting about great overtime goals, Matt Fraser. Now, I can remember you got a hat trick in 1988 that brought the series back to Toronto against the Wings for game number 6. We got killed in Toronto, but you came up with a big 3 goals. But I'm wondering your biggest playoff goal or biggest overtime goal in Eddie O's career.
First off, Gordo Muresy, always good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on this late Saturday afternoon. I would have to say that game against the Red Wings. And if you remember, Gord, back in 88, I mean, we had got lit up in game 4 at home, and Maple Leaf fans were not happy with our performance, and I think they were throwing stuff on the ice and what have you, and it was pretty bad. And we went into Detroit and gutted a game out, and I was lucky enough to be on a receiving end of a hat trick in overtime. I think Boye Salmin got the assist, and I think we won it like, I want to say it was like a, I mean, I don't even want to say it was a minute in. I think we won the game, and next thing you know, we were back in Toronto. So for me, playoff goals for sure. I mean, to be able to get a hat trick, let alone to cap it off in overtime, certainly one of the greatest thrills I've ever had in my playing career, individually for sure. When that year against Detroit as a member of the Leafs.
Take a look at, and Eddie O, we're talking about the different series and Chicago, yeah, Minnesota. Let's start with the one you're doing. And yeah, I look last night, boy, it was the unsung Wild players that got the scoring. Matt Cook got it going. Ilya Burzgalov, who's the NHL's version of Rent-A-Goalie right now, is, you know, it doesn't make sense, but they're tying 2-2, and maybe talk about the series with the defending Stanley Cup champions and the upstart and unexpected Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, well, this series has really been the tale of home games. The first two games in Chicago, Gord, the Blackhawks pretty much had their way with the Wild. It almost seemed to me like the Wild were playing to keep it close. You know, they didn't want to take too many chances. They didn't wanted to get caught in the middle of the ice. So, I mean, they had a couple of periods where they had two shots and four shots out of the six that they played. And, you know, I mean, the games were close, but they really weren't. And all of a sudden you change venue, and the Minnesota Wild, they're playing like they did against the Colorado Avalanche, where they're just, they're playing with a lot of confidence, especially in the third period of game three. And then, you know, last night from start to finish, and I think they did get a big boost by getting Matt Cook back in the lineup. You mentioned his name, Gord, but it's really been kind of a strange series, because at times the Blackhawks have toyed with the Minnesota Wild, and then last night at times it wasn't even close. The Minnesota Wild were playing keep away from the Blackhawks, and, you know, you don't see that very often, and, you know, a couple of bad goals at either end. I mean, that game could easily have been a 6-5 game like back in the day. I mean, it could easily have been that type of a score. But the Wild have fought their way back through it, and it's the best of three now. And, you know, if you stay with the pattern and the system, well, you think Chicago would come out with a real strong performance. But Minnesota's got a lot of confidence now coming out of St. Paul, and now it's the best of three. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people gave them a shot against Colorado. I thought it would go the distance that series. And now here they are in the best of three with the defending Stanley Cup champions. And for the Blackhawks, just real quick, I mean, they need some guys to really step up and get going here. I mean, they've gone long stretches without generating a lot of offense. I mean, they had 19 shots a couple of games ago. I think they said they have over 20 yesterday. So they need to find their offensive game. But I think you got to tip your helmet to Minnesota how they defend when they don't have the puck. So certainly the series is up for grabs, but, you know, you have to give the nod for sure for the team that has been there and done that, and that's the Blackhawks.
Eddie, I think this has been interesting playoffs. You look at LA, the way they started, and in Minnesota, you've been mentioning how they've kind of got that confidence now, and LA had an abysmal start, and now they've kind of started to really roll and get back into the groove that they had when they won it. And it's interesting to see. I'm trying to pinpoint what it is that when a team makes that turn and how they start to believe and they get that confidence and they know they can play and close out games and win series. Do you think Minnesota is getting there after these two wins to like you said, I don't think they believed that they could do it in the beginning. And what is it that they've done and changed to maybe win against the Blackhawks?
Well, I really believe, Mirzi, that they've realized, I think, and they wanted to play this way to begin with, but they weren't. So I just think the mindset was, you know what? We're probably better off playing 200 feet away from our goaltender, so that you got to play on your toes. You can't play in your heels. You can't play in between like a team against the Chicago Blackhawks. They're too skilled. They're too deep. You're not, you know, why play close, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. And I just think that they're being much more aggressive at home. They're playing on their toes. The defensemen are pinching in. Now, there's a time and a place to be aggressive. There's a time and a place to know who's on the ice. When you got to back off and live to fight another day. And it doesn't mean that you're just pinching at any time. I think you got to, you know the situation, and sometimes you just got to retreat, and I think that's okay. But to me, there's no question that they've played, especially in period three of game three, and then I think from start to finish last night, yeah, they had some struggles at some times, but who doesn't? I really feel it was the way that they played, and I don't want to say it was they changed their system. They just play to it, and we're very successful at it. So, like I said, they're a confident team. You know, I visited yesterday morning a game day skate with Ryan Suter and Zach Parise, and I mean, they're a confident group, and they should be. I mean, coming off of the series against Colorado and then, you know, winning game three, is that, you know, they still think they have another level to go to. Now, in saying that, I talked to Duncan Keith prior to puck drop last night, and, you know, he said the same thing. I just asked him right out, you know, just assess your team through the first 9 games of the playoffs, and just paraphrasing, you know, it's pretty much that, you know, they need to be better. There's another level to go to if they want to win a Stanley Cup again in back-to-back years. And, you know, last night, obviously, they weren't able to do that. But it should be one heck of a final couple of games here between the Wild and Blackhawks.
I mean, you mentioned Parise and Suter, and I think that I think that signing with those guys has really, you know, helped a lot of the young guys in Minnesota in that confidence that these guys have been there and done it, and they signed those guys, and now you look down the bench and those guys are out talking and doing what they're doing on the ice, and the young guys get on board and do this. So I think that those two guys in the room are a big leadership role. And you mentioned Duncan Keith, and I guess he's been there and done it, and he's obviously, the consistency would be the thing for the Blackhawks. I think that they're really not playing that consistent game to win game in and game out. So
yeah, they got to find their game quickly.
Yeah,
because we've all seen it, where all of a sudden series get away from you. Just ask the San Jose Sharks. I mean, that's how competitive our league is, and that's why these playoffs are the greatest in all professional sports. Is the momentum thing, and Gord, we've talked about this over the course of the last couple of years. You see these surges in playoff games. A, when you have it, what do you do with it, and how do you use it to your advantage? On the other side is when you don't have it, first off, most importantly, is how do you stop it? You know, how do you all of a sudden get it to your side? You just don't get it. You got to stop it first and then go ahead and take advantage of it when you have it. Now, as a coach, you only have so many options there to stop the surge that's coming at you. You got one timeout in your pocket. I mean, it was, you know, last night I thought Pittsburgh could have used a timeout there after they made the game, after the game was 2-1, and then the Rangers started coming. They made it 3-1 there. I mean, maybe there's a time where you got to reel it back in. Next thing you know, they scored again, and they all of a sudden it's 4-1. And, you know, I know no lead is safe in hockey anymore, but we've seen these surges. And, you know, as a player, you can feel it. Mirza, you felt it as a player. And I think the crowd feels it. So it's what do you do when you have it? And when you don't have it, first, how do you stop it? And then second of all, what do you do when you got it? And that's how you've seen these teams. Just all of a sudden you're getting, you know, 2, 3, 4 goals in a matter of a short period of time. And that's why it's the best around the playoffs, that's for sure.
Eddie Olchuk joining Gord Stellick and Brian Muir, Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And Larry Brooks is going to join us in a few minutes' time. So we'll get the New York point of view. There's so many storylines in that series. But Pittsburgh, somewhere you're close to, you coached them before. And you know that game, Where's Waldo? Some people are playing Where's Sidney, but some people are indignant, saying, "What are you talking about? He's doing a lot of things that you don't notice." Dennis Podfan put together an excellent collage of Mark Stahlin guys beating the crap out of him. He's taking a physical toll that Penguin players aren't jumping at, and other people just seem to think he may be hurt. Once or twice he's appeared that, you know, whether it's a concussion type thing or whatever. What's your take on a guy you know quite well?
Yeah, well, I'll say this, Gordon. I've done quite a few of the Penguin games in the playoffs to this point. The one thing that's very noticeable for me has been Sid's refusal to really drift the puck. He's had some opportunities to go ahead and let it go, but he's bypassed that, and I'm not sure why. You know, I really don't. Trying to be, you know, too friendly, trying to be too fine, trying to be too cute. We know he's an unbelievable player, and he can really let the puck go. And that's the only thing to me that I see. Yeah, he's taken a lot of hits, but I think he's done a lot of good things in the games that I've seen. He could easily have 5 or 6 more points, but at the end of the day, I think for the Penguins, who have underachieved the last 4 seasons, I don't think it's about, you know, Sidney Crosby getting points. It's about him playing well and making the other players around him better. So for me, that's the only thing, Gordon, in doing quite a few of the Penguin games, is that I've noticed is that he's had a chance to go ahead and let it go, and he hasn't. So is that, you know, is he favoring something? Is it something bothering him when he shoots the puck? I mean, that's the first thing that goes off in my mind. But then again, you could say, well, just trying to be a little bit too fancy and trying to make the perfect play. So the Penguins are going to need him to certainly get on the board. The goal scoring is one thing, but I don't think that, you know, as long as he's generating and creating some offense, and he always got a scheme for the guy, and I still think he's an effective player even when he's not, because teams have to scheme towards him and game plan against him when he's on the ice.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Eddie. I think that, I mean, you look back with the Olympics at what he did in the Olympics and now here to the regular season and through the playoffs. Like you said, teams have to monitor him. They have to play their top lines against him. He obviously takes that time away from other guys, and then you have the backup. He makes better players better on his team, and I think that's one of the most important things you have to kind of distinguish as these superstars are. Granted, he's not getting the points that everyone thinks he should get, but he's also making a lot of other players better on the ice. So You know, maybe he's going to do the one thing and score that one big goal, and everyone's going to look at this and say, you know, it's all for naught because he scored a big goal at a big time. So I think he's doing all right, and he's being a Sydney that that we all know.
Well, you take a look, and you talk about Sidney Crosby at Pittsburgh Penguins, Eddie. I want to ask you one other one. I was just doing an interview in Pittsburgh, a guy named Tab or something. Do you know the radio guy? Tab something?
Tab Douglas?
Yeah. Sounds like Dash Riprock or something, an old 60s movie star. But anyway, he brought up one, came a little bit from left field, but, you know, the Carolina situation. And two-part, which you never should ask a two-part question, but they're connected. You know, one in Carolina. He mentioned your name as a possible coaching candidate, but certainly you know Ron France as well. So yeah. I'm curious what you think is going to happen there. And the other one is Kirk Muller, a guy we love in Toronto. Some people seem to think Brendan Shanahan might get him coming here, yet other people seem to think St. Louis is the place with Doug Armstrong and what have you, that he's got a great connection. So, one, what are you hearing in Carolina? And what about our good friend Kirk Muller?
Yeah, well, I think Kirk will probably have plenty of options at the National Hockey League level for sure. You know, and don't forget, he was a part of the Nashville organization as well. So I think he was in Milwaukee, Gord, I think for a year with the Nashville Predators minor league affiliate in the American Hockey League. And, you know, I think he played for Hitch and, you know, tied to Toronto. So, I mean, he's going to have plenty of opportunities, and he's a hockey lifer for sure. And, you know, I'd be shocked if he's not a part of the staff here at some point in the very near future. As far as Carolina, you know, Ron Francis is a former teammate, roommate, one of my best friends in the game, a guy that's been a mentor to me. And, you know, he's got an unbelievable opportunity to be in charge of the Carolina Hurricanes. And, you know, they got to figure out what direction they're going, not only, you know, on the ice, but off the ice as well. And, you know, look, I think anybody that knows me, you know, I do still have that passion for the teaching part of it. But I don't see anything happening at the National Hockey League level. I mean, if I was going to get an opportunity, Gord and Mirzi, I would like to go to the lower level where I originally wanted to go when I got the opportunity with the Pittsburgh Penguins. But I love what I'm doing. You know, I get a chance to work for my hometown team, the Blackhawks, on the broadcast side, and then get the national stuff going on. So for me, I'm very content at where I am. You know, you look at, there are a lot of rumors and speculation, and people start tying people up at the hip because they have relationships with them. But hey, that's the nature of the business. I mean, it's no different than, you know, what's going on in other parts of the National Hockey League. So it'll be interesting, though, with Carolina is, you know, A, what type of team are they going to have? And what type of leader do you want behind the bench there to get them back to where they need to get to? I mean, they've been out of the playoffs for, you know, for too long, and have the utmost confidence in a guy like Ron Francis is that's going to get them back to where they were a few years ago.
Anyway, I just want to be clear. So you talk about your coaching, about going to a lower level. I just want to be clear on the broadcast side, being the big shot with NBC. You didn't say, I just want to go. I don't want to do Hockey Central Saturday just to go to the lower level once a week. I want to make sure, like, this is the big leagues too, right?
Now, hold on a second. No, first off, no big shot. Okay, I did have a pretty good shot when I played, but I'm not big shot, first of all. And look, this is a part of my duties, and I love being on with you guys every Saturday, so regardless of what happens, you guys can always call me right around dinner time on Saturday, and I'll be available for you, regardless of what hat I may be wearing or a couple of different hats that I'm wearing on it seems like a daily basis.
Well, Eddie, I played with you, and I never had you as a coach, but I know you as a player, and I'm sure you'd be an amazing coach at any level, so good luck in that venture.
Well, I appreciate that, and again, this is kind of something that, I don't like talking about, because I'm not in the business of ever being about me or the individual or anything like that. I think anybody that knows me knows I really enjoyed my opportunity that I had to teach in Pittsburgh. You know, we had a very young team. We were getting ready for the work stoppage. You know, we had a 5-year plan, and it was all about growing and learning. And like I said, I mean, when I went in for the interview in Pittsburgh, I was ready to go to the American Hockey League. That's where I thought I was going, because the Penguins didn't have any coaches at that particular time. And, hey, things happen for a reason. I think that opportunity in Pittsburgh as a head coach there has opened up a lot of doors. I think it's made me a better hockey person. I think it's made me understand the everydays of what goes on in a National Hockey League organization from every level. And I think it's, like I said, it's made me a better hockey person. And hopefully I can, you know, bring that onto the broadcast each and every night. So look, it may never happen. We all got itches. You all got to scratch it. And, you know, it may not happen, and that's okay. But right now I'm just happy with what I'm doing. And hopefully in the near future I'll be able to scratch my itch at the Preakness, because my Derby pick, Gordo, was not very good, by the way, just for the record. So I want to make it perfectly clear. And again, let me just say this. The true colors of someone or something aren't when things are great. Like 2 years ago when I picked the winner in the Exacta and the Triactor. But this year, the true colors of someone is when things are tough. And you know what? My horse is still running in the Kentucky Derby and has not finished. So we'll be better next week, that's for sure.
We'll get that pick next week. Like we said, I appreciate your candor about the coaching, but also the Toronto and area ties. I mean, you're a 16-year-old kid playing for the Stratford Cullitons all those years ago, so it's always great to have you on board. And have a nice meal tonight. Enjoy the hockey, and we'll talk to you next week, okay?
Good, always great being with you. Thanks. Beers, be well, pal.
Yeah, you too.
Eddie Olczyk joining us. And, Brian, before we go to break, just a thought about on the coaching side. Randy Carlisle back, assistants get thrown under the bus. And I'm going to say, you know, nowadays pitching coaches, hitting coaches get fired before managers. Offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators get fired before head coaches in football. It's not uncommon. I don't like it. I think either keep him and let him keep Dave Farish, or fire the both of them. But what did you make of the announcement?
It's an interesting thing. It's a vote of confidence for Randy, obviously. But I tend to agree with you in the fact that you want a good relationship between those coaches, and you don't want to have to come in and hand him someone and you don't know how that relationship's going to be. You want them to have a good working relationship, good personal relationship, so they can do what they need to do behind the bench. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see who they hire there and what they do, whether he has input in it or not. So, vote of confidence on the deal that he signed, and they're going to go with him. And I think that he's obviously going to have some input with Shanny on what's going to go forward here, because he's going to want the team that he wants. So, We'll see how that assistant gets hired.
Well, we'll find out. We'll talk a little bit about the Toronto situation, but want to talk more about the playoff action that continues. Tom Reed will join us next, a Minnesota Wild color analyst. Larry Brooks, one of the all-time great NHL insiders of the New York Post, will also check in. You're listening to Hockey Central Saturday. Gord Stelick, Brian Muir with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back. Hockey Central Saturday. Gord Stelick, Brian Muir with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And it's sunny, beautiful outside here in Toronto, but great playoff weather. Unfortunately, no Toronto playoff team, no Calgary playoff team. But we'll talk about the teams that continue. And last night, the Minnesota Wild to even it up 2 games apiece against the Chicago Blackhawks. And pleased to be joined by their radio analyst, Tom Reed. And Tom, not just a radio analyst, but I mean, this must be your retirement money, what you're making at your bar in these kind of games. Holy mackerel. Your license to print money.
It was a little busy yesterday. We like that, though. We like the 8 o'clock starts, too, because people like to get off work at 5 o'clock and come right downtown St. Paul. So it works out well for us. But, just the fact that they're in the playoffs, and you guys know what it's like not to be in the playoffs, and we've been there before. So it's kind of an exciting time, certainly in Minnesota.
You know, I met you the first time back in it was my first road trip, 79. The Leafs played the North
1917?
Stars. 1917. and the Leafs got killed in that one, Bobby Smith and Payne. And, you know, there was kind of the team of the 80s thing with the North Stars. And I met you, and you were just starting to do some radio work there. What's the difference now? I mean, what is it now? Different cities and that, but how do you compare hockey, NHL hockey in Minnesota now compared to the heady days of the North Stars?
Well, I think the fan appreciation is still there. You remember the North Stars in 81 when they went to the Stanley Cup Finals against the New York Islanders, 91 against the Pittsburgh Penguins. But Minnesota, unfortunately, lost their franchise back in 1993 when Norm Green moved it to Dallas and didn't get one back until the year 2000. But I think more than anything else now, certainly the game has changed tremendously from what it was back in those days to what it is today. The training techniques of the players and what they bring to the table and how they prepare themselves and so on. I mean, we used to have a coach, we had a trainer, we had a equipment guy that traveled. That's all that traveled with the entire team. And the coach took care of getting the rooms for everybody and handing out the keys. And now you've got an entourage of coaches and video people and trainers and, people who work in the medical field. We've traveled with doctors now. is totally different from back then. But the game has changed in such a much faster game than it used to be.
I grew up in Winnipeg, and I've been down in Minnesota playing a lot of games, and we used to travel down as young ones playing. But to see the passion that's there in that state for hockey, and now having this playoff run for the organization, I think it's done, you know, leaps and bounds. And obviously you see the fan base in your bar and enjoying the games. Where do you see this team going forward here from in the next couple of years? Do you think they have the base to do what they need to do in order to win the cup?
Well, they do. I mean, I look at a team like being a big puzzle, and there's pieces that go in the puzzle. Some are big pieces, and some are small pieces. But I think they've added some pretty big pieces in the likes of Parisi and Suter, and, you know, Koivu's under long-term contract. You've got Commonville long-term contract. But you need the little pieces also. Those are the guys who really do make a difference. And, when you look at Minnesota, it's a fairly young team. When you look at the youth of some of these kids, with the Coils and the Granlins and the Hollas, who certainly have a bright future ahead of them, there's no question about that. So you look down the road too. But Minnesota's done a good job, I think, with Chuck Fletcher coming in here with Brent Flair, his assistant, and acquiring players that they know are going to help us not only now but also down the road as they develop into better players. And you have that transition of moving the older players out and the younger players back in. Minnesota still has some pieces to put into the puzzle to make them a better team, but you do it in baby steps, so you can't do it all overnight. And I think in the 5 years that Chuck has been here, that he's taken this team from one level, and certainly has got the elevation going from year to year.
They definitely have made the step, and they're doing very well, and you obviously see it in the fans.
Yeah, the fans have been unbelievable this series. I mean, both in Chicago and in Minnesota. We saw that in the first series against Colorado, the fans, they were pretty loud. But when we came to Chicago, and it's like that all year long, but it seems to come to another level when you get into the playoff picture. Now, our fans in Minnesota have done the same thing. I mean, they're boisterous, they're loud, they create a lot of energy for the players, and then the players, in turn, give that energy back to the crowd, so it's a two-way street. And the way that the Wild have played also in the last couple of games, both in Minnesota, and winning those games, certainly has elevated the expectations a little bit, although I think people are very happy with what they've seen so far. And if something bad were to happen, and suppose they didn't advance, I think the fans would be disappointed, but I think encouraged also for what's coming up in the future years.
Todd, you know, we talk about the... last night it was the grunts that were getting the goals. It wasn't Parise and Suter. It was the depth that you were just talking about. But in a million years, Ilya Bryzgalov, you know, I mean, this guy, he can't be bad-mouthed more. I'm sure his resume has nobody on it, nobody recommending him. He's the NHL version of Rent-A-Goalie, 1-800-ILYA, and he'll come play for your team. And I'm saying this with admiration now, that all of a sudden, when you least expect it, this guy, I know it's not a lot of shots you're getting, but talk about the Ilya Bryzgalov experience and probably his best chapter in the last couple of years.
Well, it's interesting. He didn't have a team. When you go back to the last training camp, they know where he's going to go. Wound up with Edmonton, went down to the Viners for one game. And Minnesota's situation with goaltending this year, they've had seven different goaltenders, of which five have dressed for games. So this has been really a roller coaster for goaltenders trying to stay healthy. You know, the loss of Backstrom, of course, Harding having MS, certainly put this team behind the eight ball. They brought up young Darcy Kemper. He's been injured a few times also. And they just keep rotating these goaltenders in. The team in front has been very good. But Bryzgalov has been, he's been terrific to work with, from my standpoint anyway. You have to be very guarded with him. I mean, he's very, very quiet. I don't want to say quiet, but he's very selective of his answers and what he says. And I think most of that is that he likes just to toy with the media a little bit. Like even yesterday, talking to the press, he's talking about something, and he says, I forgot the question. You know, what are you talking about? You know, and he just laughs. But I think it's more of a stick with him, too. But he was good last night. There was a couple situations, a couple goals. You know, you look at him and say, should that be a goal? Would that be a goal? I mean, that one soft goal, I thought Sharp goal wasn't a great goal between the legs. But at the same time, he came up with some huge saves when Sharp had that breakaway. I mean, that was a tremendous save at the right time for Minnesota. And he stole one off of Morin, who had a tight, close to the net, a shot right to the pad, and he made the save there. So your goaltending has to be terrific. It can't be just great. It's got to be terrific, in my mind, when you get in the playoffs. Otherwise, you're not going to advance too far.
Tom, well, I'll tell you what, with the great success on the ice, but also in the bar, when I stop by, I'm going to say I'm great friends of Tom and Patty Reed. It's on their tab, okay? Is that okay?
Yeah, it sure is. Make sure you come after 2 a.m., though. We're closed.
Anyway, I always appreciate making time. I know it's a busy time. Good luck the rest of the way, okay?
Thanks, guys.
Tom Reed, Minnesota Wilds radio analyst. His wife, Patty, was a PR person there. Now she handles the Andretti racing team. So she does, Yeah, big-time stuff. Tell me the most eccentric goalie teammate you ever played with.
Goalies are eccentric in their own right. Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily a bad thing. You know,
yeah, no, they're just different. Goalies tend to have their own thing, and they do their own thing, and we're all on the ice, and they stay in the net and do their thing, and it's just their, you know, they want to be in their space. But, you know, I've had some normal ones. I look at the normal ones, Ole Kolzig and Brent Johnson. You know, Patrick was eccentric as much as he was intense, I think. He really, really was an intense guy. But a couple of minor league ones, Scott Fankhauser, I can think of, were unique individuals that, you know, the stories can't go over the air right now. But they're very unique in the sense that they're in their own little world. But I played with a lot. You know, I think I might have more teams than Ilya or Brizgalov now, but he might be up there. So I'm at 7. I think he's pretty close.
You're trying to count. Of course, he condensed a lot together. He seemed to have a pretty good run going there. And it's interesting. Olaf Kolzig's a guy who lived in Toronto a couple of years. You know, we talked to him once. His dad got moved around in the hotel business. So he, certain years he lived here as well. But the goaltender, the eccentric things, they're a lot more funny when they stop the puck, I can imagine.
Well, yeah, it's if you get a good one, you can deal with a lot. And other times when they're not stopping the puck and they've got their little idiosyncrasies and quirks, then you're kind of it's driving you nuts when they're not stopping the puck. But if they stop the puck, you can go do what you want back there. I don't care what you do, what you say, just go stop it. So
well, from Ilya Brizgalov, Henrik Lundqvist is certainly stopping the puck for the New York Rangers. Of course, joining us on Hockey Central Saturday, Gord Stellick, Brian Muir, and pleased to be joined by Larry Brooks, one of the preeminent NHL insiders covering it for the New York Post. And Larry, always great to catch up with you. And I know you've seen pretty well everything over the years. And, you know, and you can write the trades and the rumors and that, but also the human side, and maybe go through the Martin St. Louis, New York experience over the past 48 hours.
Different. That's for sure. And, special. You know, Marty and the Rangers landed in Pittsburgh early afternoon on Thursday, and that's when he learned of the death of his mom. And he immediately took a flight to Montreal to be with his family on Thursday night, and then decided at some point Friday that he wanted to play in the game, that he thought he would honor his mother and honor his father and honor his family by playing. He had a long talk with his dad, and they reached the conclusion that his mom would have wanted him to play last night. And so he flew back to Pittsburgh yesterday afternoon, rejoined the team. Clearly it was a very emotional time for him, a very emotional time for the Rangers, and they went out and played an exceptional game against the Penguins. Now, you know, Pittsburgh didn't play especially well. How much of that was the Rangers? How much of that was Pittsburgh? I guess, you know, that's the question of every game. Game four, how much of it was the Rangers being bad and the Penguins being good? So, you know, the game ended last night. Marty spoke for a couple of minutes in the room. He was drained, proud. Spoke glowingly of his mom and of his family, and then he flew right back to Montreal after the game, and he will rejoin the Rangers tomorrow when they play the Penguins tomorrow night back at the Garden. So he will fly back to New York tomorrow, and he is bringing his father and his sister with him to the game tomorrow night. So it should be another very emotional night for the Rangers and for Marty St. Louis, who... Yeah, you know, what's interesting to me isn't so much that the Rangers bonded around him, because we know hockey players, we know the kind of people they are, but he's only been a Ranger for 2 months, and to hear the way his teammates were talking about him last night was an indication of the kind of individual he obviously is. And you know, I don't know him well. Again, I've been around him a number of times. I've never dealt with him on a daily basis until the last couple of months. And I can say this about him in a professional sense in our professional relationship. He hasn't played especially well for Rangers. It's been a very tough transition for him. He scored one goal in the regular season for them in 19 games. It was a shorthanded goal. He had a pretty good series against the Flyers. He got off a really good start against the Flyers and then began to fade a little bit and really had not played well at all against the Penguins. And so, and through this entire journey, he has been a stand-up guy in dealing with the media. And he is willing to stand there and talk about what's going wrong with him, why he hadn't been able to, why he hadn't been producing. Day in and day out, he's there. And that's just obviously a glimpse of the man. But it is clear that this is a pretty special individual as well as a pretty special hockey player.
Yeah, I mean, Larry, I played with Marty in Tampa I came up with him through college, and he was at the Canadian national team tryout when I was there. And I've got to say, I've got to agree with you wholeheartedly on the fact that Marty is a stand-up guy, and he's a hardworking individual that, you know, in the time of the NHL, when he made it in the beginning, for being such a small guy, he right. had to battle to get there. And now he's proven to be such an elite player. And not only is he an elite player, I think that he, like you said, he's an elite person in the sense that he deals with his issues. He talks up front. And kind of to go back on the other side of things with the passing of his mother and how the team rallies around, I've been involved in a couple of situations like that where, you know, you get an incident like that where there's a passing of a family member and the team, they rally around the guy. But, you know, Marty is who he is. And like you say, his reputation precedes him and right. everyone knows what he's about. And I think this could be really big for the Rangers in a sad way with what happened to his mother, that they end up rallying around this issue and really start to get together and realize what they can do as a team. Because, you know, sometimes it takes something like this, an event or something happening where the team realizes, you know what, here's what we can do. And hopefully they can maintain this momentum that they had when they rallied around Marty last game and keep going and, take it to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I agree with you about that too, because they've been kind of bouncing through the playoffs. They beat the Flyers. They're a better team than the Flyers, and they outlasted them in seven. But it wasn't a particularly impressive series for them. They got by. They found ways to win, which I guess defines what they were for a large part of the season. You'd watch them play. And there wasn't other than the goaltending, which over the second half of the year was superb, and the first half of the year where Cam Talbot came in and did an extraordinary job in support of Lundqvist, who had gotten off to a very bad start this year. It took him until January to find his game. And other than the goaltending, the play of their big three defense of Girardi, McDonough, and Staal, there aren't a lot of distinguishing characteristics about them, and they would find ways to win games. They're a very poised team. They play it. They try and play at a real pace. They involve everybody. That's Alain Vigneault's style. He rolls four lines. He plays three defense pair, and so it really was a collaborative effort throughout the season. They got to the Flyers, and like I say, they beat them. They outlasted them in seven. And then they got to Pittsburgh, and they played a pretty good game one. But their next three games just weren't up to standards. They were just sort of leveling off and going from one game to the next, and there was nothing particularly distinctive about the way they were going through this series. And then, it's unfortunate. It's as unfortunate as it gets. And this tragedy may have galvanized them, and it may have. So they are home where they haven't been particularly good this year. But I think they're prepared to play their game, and that's what they were able to do last night. They exposed the Pittsburgh defense really for the first time in the series. They were hard on the forecheck. They forced a number of turnovers in the Pittsburgh zone. They got out pretty well last night. The power play worked, and Lundqvist was very, very good. There was a 5 or 6 minute span where the game might have turned in the second period, and Lundqvist made some exceptional saves. He was playing extremely well in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about kind of the team identity and the way they win games and what they've done during the regular season. I stand here on the other side of the microphone now and having played it and been through all these momentum shifts that Eddie and we and Gordon and I talked about, and to kind of get an understanding of what it is your team does and how they do it in order to win. And it's interesting to see playoff teams that really don't understand it and don't see it and they can't really grasp it, and then other ones get it and they know how to win and then they just start rolling. And hopefully, like I said, with Marty's situation, what's happened, and take some good from this for the team, and hopefully they can find that identity and start to roll with that and get around Marty's plight there and win a couple games here against Pittsburgh.
Right. So it's interesting because in Pittsburgh, there is a sense that they may have blown something here. I guess their Game 7 record isn't especially good. Obviously, they won the Cup in a Game 7, but since then, I guess it's not very good. And there's a fair amount of angst in Pittsburgh that here's this team that's leading 3-2, but is in trouble. And it is. It's up to the Rangers to play their best hockey. Right now, over the last couple of games, Malkin is playing at a different level, just a different level. And he almost single-handedly dragged the Penguins back into that game last night. And he created a couple of opportunities when Pittsburgh was still in the game in the second period that his teammates just couldn't capitalize on, couldn't finish. To watch him play at that level the last couple of games, you're left with a thought that if he competed like this all the time, he would be impossible to handle. If he competed every game the way Crosby competes every game, you couldn't stop him. It would be impossible. But he doesn't, and so
he's Russian.
I'm just kidding. So,
but
right now he is, and it takes like four guys, to stop him. And when he's on a line with Crosby, it's really a pretty difficult task. The Rangers did okay on him last night, but they're going to have to be even better against him tomorrow night.
Well, Larry, looking forward to that. As we say, we've got hockey series. The last couple of days, they made a series of it. Certainly the New York Rangers, an unfortunate storyline, but on the ice, we'll see how it plays out tomorrow. Always appreciate your time. We go way back. Thanks for making time, Larry.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks for having me. Nice talking to you.
Larry Brooks from the New York Post joining us. We'll come back. Mike Fiuta just got promoted, the director of hockey operations for the Los Angeles Kings. We'll kick off the next hour. Gord Stelnick, Brian Muir, you're listening to Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back, Hockey Central Saturday. Gord Stelnick with you, Brian Muir in for Rick Natras. Been a pleasant first hour, another hour here on the Sportsnet Radio Network as we have that kind of Stanley Cup weather. Beautiful weather outside and eight teams remaining in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And Mike Fiuta is going to join us in a few minutes' time. We'll check in with him, the just promoted Director of Hockey Operations for the Los Angeles Kings. Troy Murray will get the Chicago Blackhawks point of view as it's tied 2-2 against the Minnesota Wild. And interesting, Brian Muir, you are articulated quite well with Larry Brooks about the Pittsburgh-New York series. I mean, it's the unthinkable what happened to Martin St. Louis. It certainly transcends and is larger than hockey in a big way, but in an interesting way on the ice, and he was upfront about it. My mom wants me to play. He's going to bring his dad and sister to the game tomorrow. That when you were looking for something for the Rangers to galvanize the team, this unfortunate death of his mom has done that.
I'm sure it's going to be an amazing emotional game for Marty to have his parent or his father and his sister in the building, and that team's going to rally around him and they're going to pick him up, and hopefully they can play the game in honor of her and keep going in this series. Right, it's something like you said to galvanize them. I think they're looking for something. Larry had mentioned that they didn't really have that identity on how they win games, and maybe this can get them to find that and move forward from here and hopefully use this as a positive.
Well, take a look at the other action that's going around the National Hockey League. 2 games tonight, and Sean Gordon, we might connect with him later on, the Boston-Montreal environment, Anaheim, L.A. Like we said, we'll talk to Mike Fiuta in a few minutes' time, get the sense what is going on there. But for the Anaheim Ducks, God love Timo Solani. I mean, again, the last couple of days, everyone's made it a series that – 7 seconds left was a killer when Anaheim had the win last Saturday. Give the Kings credit. I mean, they showed the San Jose Sharks. You let a little slip a little bit, and boy, they just clamp on it.
It's scary, really. You know, LA has found that what they need to win, and I think that they know from the past that they had when they won the Cup, and they understand that. And to get back to that spot, like I said, as a player to find it, it's hard, right? As you have 23 guys or 22 guys out there playing, and you can't just, you know, put your finger on it and say this is what we need to do and go out and do it. It's a matter of finding it, and I think LA's found it, and they're starting to roll, and they showed the San Jose Sharks what a mistake, a simple mistake, can do, and you can be out of a series and out of the playoffs. So I think that they're going to be a tough, tough team going forward.
Well, that team's at it tonight. The Kings taking on the Anaheim Ducks. Gord Stellick, Brian Muir, joined by Mike Fiuta, the Los Angeles Kings Director of Hockey Operations. And Mike, always great to catch up. I know your roots go back here in the Ontario area as far as doing it all. And we want to congratulate you getting promoted within the Kings organization. And maybe talk about that, because yours is one of the names kicked around as a potential general manager elsewhere. Got guys like Jim Benning and Ron Hextall and others. And how this all came to pass.
Well, first, thanks, Gord. Thanks very much. I think you understand the process. It's one of those things. I was very fortunate, I guess, earlier in the year, Buffalo had called about an opportunity, and Dean allowed me the opportunity to interview, and things went well. And I mean, Los Angeles is the only team I know, and I love it here. I love working with Dean. We got a great staff. Some things were coming up. Obviously, there's a bunch of different vacancies, and I think there were some inquiries made, and Dean just sat me down and kind of talked about my future as what you'd want your general manager to talk about, and just like more of a long-term goal. You know, we talked a lot about, you know, the Jim Nails of the world, but maybe not rushing into different things and going after different opportunities, but, taking a step within the organization learning a heck of a lot more about some of the ins and outs, the upper management level, while not losing what I do with regards with Mark Cannetti, with regards to running the amateur draft. And the position kind of came about. It was just something that he threw out with regards to the VP of hockey ops, the director of player personnel. It'll allow for me to do a little bit more stuff with working with Rob Blake and with our minor team, with our minor league team in Manchester, and, being kind of a liaison between the development group and the pro staff. And it's a little bit of everything. It's a pretty vast job description. I'm excited about it, but again, I'm not going to lose my roots with regards to still continuing to run the amateur draft with Mark Cannetti and our amateur group.
I think it's interesting that the Dean would let you, he'd say go ahead and do the interviews, but I think you understand that the old adage that when everyone else wants you, he's going to want you and keep you around there. So I think that it helped your situation in the fact that you're getting interviewed elsewhere and kind of proving your credentials. For them to then solidify and say, you know what, we want you to stay here and learn. And I think I agree with you in the fact that it's great to stay under that umbrella in such a great organization. I had the good fortune to play there, and some great people in Blakey and Dean, and they know what's going on, and it's a good place to learn. So I think you've got yourself a very good situation there.
Well, I appreciate it. And part of the equation is thinking that we've got a good team now, and I think we're going to be a good team for some time to come. And again, I think that's part of, you get the promotion, and part of the promotion, basically, your window closes to go elsewhere. So those the opportunities to interview elsewhere kind of go out the window when you make that commitment, and it's something I was thrilled to do. I certainly understand it. I understand it, and Dean doesn't, want to be talking about promotions and internally climbing up the ladder within if you're planning on, moving somewhere else at the end of the year. So he wants to know that you're going to be around, and you're bought into everything, and that's part of the industry. And I'm thrilled to be a part of things now and for the future. That's for sure.
Talk about the LA King team. I mean, it's a Stanley Cup team, so you got guys that have experienced, wore the Stanley Cup ring. But when you, I always use that playing with house money. But when you're down 0-3 to a team like the San Jose Sharks, how much are you playing with house money? How much does it change things that this incredible piano's off your back?
You know what? It's strange because you don't want to play with house money too often. Like we were playing against, obviously the Sharks, it's a tremendous rivalry, and it's unbelievable how our guys were able to, they'll throw out every cliche you want, one game at a time, one shift at a time, but they found a way to basically break it down into little segments, and it didn't seem like such a long crawl back the way they played and the way they performed, and you could just start to see as the series wore on that they just started to that it factor that this group seems to have. They believe in themselves. When Jonathan Quick's on the top of his game, you know, we believe we can compete with anybody in the league. And then to get through them the way we did, you know, is kind of banged up as we have been. I mean, we were really fortunate the year we won the cup. There weren't a lot of injuries, whereas, you know, we're battling something, but it just seems other guys are stepping up, and now we're playing a great team in Anaheim. And, I mean, I think we're very fortunate to go into their building and kind of steal one with the late, you know, with Gabby scoring late and then getting the overtime winner. That was kind of a bit of a theft on our part. And then kind of winning too ugly, and then, you know, it wasn't the prettiest game at home, but Anaheim certainly played a desperate game the other night and took it right back to us. So, you know, we're sitting here tonight, and you don't want to start allowing teams to crawl back. We've seen we can do it firsthand, and Anaheim is a team that's certainly capable of doing it if we don't bring our A game. So we seem to have a crew that they're a little bit more resilient when there is a sense of urgency, and there's a, you know, and sometimes the future doesn't look so bright. They seem to get their backs up and really dig in, but hopefully that process starts tonight, because you don't want to be coming from behind in every series.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with Quick. When you know as a player that you have a guy back there as a backstop like Quick and doing what he can do and now hitting his stride like he is in the playoffs, I think it's really got your guys believing. And you talked about momentum swings and how you kind of maintain that momentum. I think you guys have really... you've turned the tide in your favor, and you can really take this, you know, ride Quick like you did when you won it, and hopefully he can take you to the promised land.
Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, I don't think I've ever met a more accountable guy in my life as far as how he critiques himself. I mean, he was not happy with himself after the last game. I mean, I thought he was fine, but he just has a different level of measuring stick for himself, and there's, you know, I think he was very frustrated with himself. I mean, we were joking that the NHL called and asked us to give the Jennings back after the first two games against San Jose with our 14 goals against whatever it is, but yeah, I mean, he's kind of dug in, and his numbers are a heck of a lot more Jonathan Quickish as of late, and I'd be shocked if he didn't get anything but his A game tonight.
We talked earlier, Larry Brooks talking about the New York situation, of course, all that's gone on with Martin St. Louis, but, you know, he mentioned he hadn't really played all that way in a hockey sense in the regular season, and beyond the story here in the playoffs, what's gone on off the ice. And I always find it's interesting trade deadline deals that work and some that don't work, because it's almost instantaneously they kind of go one way or the other. And what a great fit Marian Gaborik's been. It's just allowed a lot of little tweaks that seem to be very positive.
You couldn't say it any better. I mean, we obviously are a team that, in spite of looking at our roster, you'd struggle to wonder why we struggle to score a lot of goals. But I think we're such a, you know, we almost play the regular season a playoff style where we, you know, Daryl has the guys so conscious about their own zone, and we play such a shutdown style that sometimes maybe we don't, he certainly doesn't limit our offense, but for whatever reason, we run a high-scoring team. And to throw in that guy that just does it naturally, I mean, we added Jeff Carter at the deadline the year we won, and he kind of provided that gun. But to be able to provide Gabby for the stretch here, and, I mean, he immediately, you know, he's formed a chemistry with, I think, the most underrated player in the league, Angie Kopitar, and there's a comfort level. Like, he makes a lot more plays. We knew he was a finisher, but he actually makes a lot more plays, and he's just got that ability. Those two goals that he scored the other night in Anaheim, those are goal scorers' goals, batting the puck out of the air, and then, you know, getting that one instant, and then he's in alone, and it's in the back of the net. So it added a element, and I think, Daryl, it's funny, if you watch, there's been times late in some pretty tight games that he's had him on the ice, and I think he showed some confidence in him, you know, just believing in him. I mean, there's no way, he's obviously not a Selke Award winner, but the way he actually showed some trust in him as far as being on the wall and being out there late in games, I think Gabby's really bought into that fact as well, and he's doing what he needs to, and he's kind of bought into the way we play the game, and then he's added his own natural flair, so he's been a tremendous fit.
It's always interesting from the general manager's point of view. It's, you know, you do that trade deadline deal, and you have that question. You know what they can do as players. You really, you know those stats, and you know what they can do, but the question is do they fit in that puzzle? And you guys have done an amazing job there, you know, bringing pieces in that fit and, you know, complement other pieces. So, you know, kudos to you guys for finding those pieces that fit like that and getting the players that can excel like they do.
Well, I think it's a credit to Dean, the pro staff, and the guys. I think you said it best. We've got a really good core here. And, I mean, I do believe that your core has to be drafted for it to be really a natural, you know, to have that. You see the teams that are winning, it's that core group, you know, the Quick and Kopitar were here before I was brought in to scout. So, I mean, obviously Al Marino's group did a tremendous job there. But then you bring in your, I've always said, Corey, if you're going to have a year where you suck, you want to come out of it with a Drew Doughty. And we ended up getting Drew in the back end, and you see that core. And now you can add some pieces from the outside, the Carters and the Richards and the Gavricks, and then they filter them in with the own young group we have with the Pearsons and the Toffolis of the world. And we kind of built our own blue line, and you can add some pieces from the outside and to your own core. And you should be able to be competitive for quite some time. And Dean and Solly, and they've done a great job managing the cap and all that stuff. It's a fun team to watch. So hopefully we can keep this thing rolling for a little while.
Mike Feuda, the LA Kings director of hockey operations, joining Gord Stellick, Brian Muir on Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Let's talk about the opponents just up the road. And as much as you got the tying goal with 7 seconds to go about a week ago tonight, guys like Timo Salani and other guys, they came back and won in, you guys almost came back at the end too, but now they bounce back. There seems to be a lot of change in momentum in every series just over the last couple of days. And what are going to be the big challenges against a team like Anaheim?
Well, getting to, I guess, if Fillier starts tonight with Anis, you got to get to him early. I mean, they probably got the best, I would say the best young backup in the world just got called up for Norfolk. I mean, Gibson's the kid that, can win games on his own. We're not quite sure. I'm assuming they're going with Fillier, but kind of get to him early. Obviously, they'd made a decision to go with Anderson, so maybe there were some questions there. So just maybe try and keep those questions in their head and just really get on them, establish a forecheck. I mean, they've got some of the best players in the world. I mean, Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaff. I mean, you don't find better gamers than that. Bolesky's played well. You know, they've got the young back end as well. It's a great matchup. It's a physical matchup. Kind of makes me laugh. I had to turn my clock back when I coached the under-17 there the other night when I saw my second line there had Jeff Carter and Corey Perry on it. So I got a bit of a kick watching Corey Perry show Jeff Carter's glove up with water. You get his competitive nature hits it to another. We figured there'd be about 9 or 10 times in the series that he'd inexplicably accidentally end up lying on top of Jonathan Quick, and I think he got her up to about 6 or 7 so far, so I'm sure that'll continue on, and we just got to remain our composure and score some big goals, and again, just try and when they stay out of the penalty box as much as we can, because they're very dangerous, and just get on, create some adversity, bang their D and just get the puck to the net, so it should be fun.
Well, it's fun sitting back watching, and I know for yourself being involved, it's the best time of the year. Mike, again, congratulations on the promotion, and look forward to chatting with you down the road. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, Gord. Thanks, Brian.
Mike Feuda, LA Kings Director of Hockey Operations, joining us. And tonight, they're one of the two games going on. Also, Boston taking on Montreal. And you know, Brian Muir, from your playoff experiences, including going all the way to a Stanley Cup championship 1 year, our good buddy, Bruce Boudreau, he's been betwixt by goaltending that's never quite set in the playoffs or running into the hottest goaltender like Yaroslav Halak a few years ago with the Montreal Canadiens. And once again, of these final 8 teams, he's got a bit of a quandary.
Yeah, he's always come up with excuses of why it never works. And, I mean, I've had him as a coach, and we had him in Manchester. I think we won 55 games in Manchester. We ended up losing in the first round. And I guess he was fortunate enough to win the Calder Cup in Hershey with the Bears. But yeah, he's had some ordeals, and like any other coach has ordeals, I think that those are things that you have to deal with. And like Mike said, they've got an amazing goalie that they've called up, and you know, maybe you sit there and you throw him into the fire and you test him and let him do it. It is a Stanley Cup playoffs, but let this kid go do it. He's proven in the minors that he can do it, and maybe the adrenaline team rallies around it and plays well in front of him.
But it is, you see, I mean, the Vancouver Canucks are an excellent example of a team that has had greatness and never quite had that in goal. I mean, Luongo was the guy, and if that Game 7 had been a bit different, might have been the way. But in the Brian Burke era, it was Dan Cloutier. The Red Wings, Tim Chevalier and Bob Asenza back in 93-94, but then they went to win by goaltender by committee. Didn't matter who it was there, that they won on one Stanley Cups. And so it is funny, certain organizations that have been continually plagued versus other guys like Lundqvist or Carey Price or whatever, you know, it's kind of a lot. I mean, Pittsburgh with Marc-Andre Fleury now, there's an element of a question there.
Yeah, he's become a question mark. And I'm a fan of Fleury's. I think that, he's obviously won a cup, and there's been some incidents where he's, had that question mark arise. But he doesn't have the best team in front of him playing defense, and it makes it difficult. I agree, you're a stellar elite goalie, but you can't stop everything. And you look at a guy like Marty Brodeur, who's done what he's done in New Jersey, and the system that we played there when I was there, you know, our goal was to give Marty the outside shots. You got a really good goalie that's going to stop every one of those. You don't give him the high-risk shots. Well, in Pittsburgh, you look at what they're giving him, and there's these backdoor plays, and he's athletic as they come, but he can't stop every single one of those, and then a lot of people throw him under the bus for that. So, you know, I'm a fan of his. I think he's a good goalie, and I think there's a lot of problems in front of him that that betwixt him, as you say.
Well, we the betwixt word, and we earlier talked about it. Let's see if the Chicago Blackhawks are betwixt by the Minnesota Wild. Tom Reed joined us earlier, the Minnesota point of view. Pleased to be joined by our friend, of course, former NHLer, the radio color analyst for the Chicago Blackhawks, Troy Murray, joining us. How you doing, Troy?
Good, guys. How are you?
We're good. We're good. And before we talk about betwixting and that, as we chat about goaltenders, you know, the proliferation of media, which keeps us all employed now. And I get a chuckle that last year, I mean, Corey Crawford was being questioned all the way till he hoisted the Stanley Cup. I mean, it's one game, all of a sudden you start saying, a guy can't score, glove side, whatever it may be. And I just find that interesting. And, you know, really here, then he signs a big contract and all of a sudden, lo and behold, you're set in goal.
Well, blame the goalies. Why not?
I love it.
Let's throw it all on the goalies, right? I mean, I know, it is kind of funny. And, you know, even after Crawford last year, you know, won the Stanley Cup, and then in the process, you know, went through Jimmy Howard, went through Jonathan Quick and Tuukka Rask, and, you know, came up with the big saves when he needed to, and Blackhawks win the Cup. And this year, when the Olympic, you know, selection was looking at the goaltenders, Corey Crawford wasn't even the mix. And, you know, it is what it is, and it's fine, and I don't think it bothers Corey all that much. But, you know, it's interesting to look at Crawford and the way that he's played for the Blackhawks here the last couple of years. And they still point fingers at him, but, you know, it is what it is, and everybody moves on. The one thing the Blackhawks have is a lot of confidence in Crawford inside their locker room. And, you know, sometimes you have bad games. Sometimes you don't stop all the pucks you'd like to. But a sign of a good goaltender is how he responds and how the team responds in front of him as well.
It's always interesting. And after the Cup and they sign him to that contract, and it definitely I've noticed that sometimes the goalies and players in general, when you do get that contract, there is that confidence from the organization that is almost it's implied with the contract. So then there it becomes a situation of comfort where you're now, I'm here, they believe in me, here I go. Because I know the battle that I faced as a player with contracts. I played, you know, 14 years and I had 14 one-year contracts. It was always you're playing for your job. And as a goalie, that's got to be difficult every year to play for your job like that and have the media and everyone saying, oh my God, questioning this and high glove and low blocker and all this and that. And then you start to question yourself. So I think a contract that they sign and show him that length of term gives him confidence. Do you agree with that?
No, I agree. I definitely agree. And I think that, you know, for Corey, he's comfortable in his own skin. And you know, he won the Stanley Cup last year. And, you know, if he didn't get it done, then everybody would be pointing the fingers that, you know, that was the weakness of the Blackhawks. So you win the Stanley Cup, you know, you sign the contract and you absolutely feel a little bit more comfortable. But as you know, I mean, goaltenders, there's always a pressure level that is completely different than any other player because he's the last line of defense and he can cover up for a lot of mistakes in front of him. You know, I heard you guys talking about, you know, Pittsburgh and Fleury. There's not a lot you can do. I mean, in the first couple of games, Brizgalov had to respect, you know, Brandon Saad coming down the slot in the backhand and, you know, somebody has to pick up Marian Hossa on the back door. That's not the goaltender's fault. And all of a sudden you kind of look at the structure in front of a goaltender is breaking down. The quality shots are, you know, hugely in favor of one team. And yet all of a sudden, you know, you're pointing fingers at the goaltender. So I think for Corey Crawford, I agree with you that, you know, he's feel comfortable the way that he is right now. The Blackhawks have a lot of confidence in him and nothing's going to change in that respect.
Troy, you know, the mental grind, and we'd love to have it here in Toronto and in Calgary in the playoffs, but we don't in the playoffs this year, unfortunately. But you look at teams when you win the Stanley Cup, Olympic year as well for a lot of these guys. It's been a long ordeal. And, you know, I last year, I loved that moment when Brent Seabrook skated the penalty box and, you know, kind of got Jonathan Toews back on message. And earlier, like, Don Cherry was making comments about it, like Duncan Keith seemed to be out of whack for a game or two, that it just seems there's elements of that, but it seems like when you have a leadership core or group, that's what brings it all back to the common goal and the common way they play to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, with Chicago, you know, the core group has won two cups in the last 4 years. So, you know, they you know, not only have played together, but they're good friends off the ice. So, you know, there's no hesitation for a Brent Seabrook to say something to a Jonathan Toews or a Patrick Sharp or a Marian Hossett to take, you know, Duncan Keith or Brent Seabrook over and say, hey, you know, just relax, just play your game. You're a good hockey player. You know, don't worry about it. Don't stress anything. There's a real good comfort level of the core group is inside the locker room. It just doesn't fall on the shoulders of Jonathan Toews because, you know, one guy just can't carry everybody. So with the support group that they do have in the locker room, I think there's a really good belief that, you know, anytime you want to say something to those guys, yeah, you can. And it's not always, you know, Patrick Sharp has been going through a little bit of a drought here in the postseason. He did score in the last game against Brizgalov. But, you know, those guys have enough confidence. They can go up and talk to Patrick and say, hey, just keep playing your game, keep shooting the puck. Things are going to turn around. They'll start going in for you.
It's interesting. This, I mean, I look at this, and when I got traded to Colorado, and these guys, Colorado won, I think, 6 or 7 division titles, and they'd gone deep into the playoffs, and then we ended up winning the Cup. And I looked at guys like Adam Foote and Blake and these guys that had played tons of minutes and had long playoff runs. I look at this now and the speed of the game, and like you said, 2 cups in the last 4 years, gone deep and played a lot of playoff games, a lot of regular season games. It has to be taking its toll on these guys now. And, you know, having that leadership group in there and getting the young guys and teaching them and bringing them along is an important part. And do you think you guys are bringing the young guys up in Chicago and those that elder generation that have won the Cup and been through this are kind of tutoring the guys properly?
Well, I think so. And you know, things always go in cycles. And for years, the Blackhawks were missing a little bit of a core leadership group inside the locker room. And things have turned around since Jonathan Toews has come into there. And, you know, he's such a well-matured young man and 26 years of age as he is right now. But, you know, well beyond his years as far as maturity and experience inside a locker room. He's been on the big stage all over the place. And the culture for the Blackhawks is going to be strong for many years to come because the guys like Andrew Shaw and the Marcus Krugers and these guys who are coming through as younger players now, those guys look at Jonathan Toews. They see how he prepares himself. He sees how they see how he reacts to certain situations, how he treats the media, how he goes about his game preparation, his off-season training. That's a culture that gets built. And then once that culture starts passing down, you know, from generation to generation, you see these good teams that always have that culture, and it never seems to go away because at some point it has to start. And for the Blackhawks, that started when Jonathan Toews came in. You know, Patrick Kane is one of those guys in the leadership core group now. I mean, he came in, he was a little bit of a wild card to begin with, but, you know, here's a guy that really has dedicated himself to what he does off the ice in the off season, making himself as good as he can possibly be, trains hard. And the young guys look at that and they say, wow, you know, if this is one of the best players in the world and he's working out that hard in the off season to improve himself, I should be doing the same thing. So the culture is where it needs to be right now. And as these guys grow older, the next guys that come in will learn from those guys and will be passed down. So they've got the right mixture inside that locker room now, and they are bringing these young guys around in the right order.
Well, I got to say to all the Chicago fans that when I was there in, I think it was 98, 99, you guys wouldn't have Jonathan Toews or Kane because I was so bad. We finished so bad that we got you the first round draft pick. So I'm part of those, both those cups and all that stuff and all that good culture in Chicago.
So you're welcome. How about
yeah,
that?
So they better be thanking me.
You know what? But you have to be dead to get those picks.
Yeah.
And you know what? You have to get the guys like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews at number 3 in deep drafts because sometimes you're a bad team and things don't go well. And all of a sudden you look at the draft and you're getting picks and you're going, yeah, man, there's not a Mario Lemieux in this draft or there's not a Sidney Crosby in this draft. And you're going, yeah.
I always say it was because Chelly got traded. So that's really what it was all about. But I'm glad they've got such a good culture there now.
Well, you know, Seb, with the cultures that's going on now, and you know, what I'm interested in when you have success, I'm trying to find another name too. There were a couple of names that always jumped up at me, but guys that were phenomenal in the playoffs. You know, they would get like 8 goals during the regular season, then they get 8 goals in 10 games.
Didn't Bickle do that?
I was just saying. I mean, Claude Lemieux played better than that, but that kind of thing. But it seems like in Brian Bickle's case, he signs a big deal, but he's a money player. Who else are the money players there?
Talbot. There was one that did it. Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Who else in Chicago, especially, been the money players, Troy?
Well, it's, you know,
I mean, more so than the regular season. I mean, bring it up more so than the regular season.
Well, I think a guy like Andrew Shaw really has a game that suits the playoffs. I mean, he has high intensity. He's got a lot of emotion, and he's a player that thrives in those conditions. And I think that, you know, the bigger the stage, you know, like some of the top players in the game, a guy like Andrew Shaw really kind of excels in that. You know, for Brian Bickell, amazing, you know, the transformation that happens between the regular season and the consistency and what has happened here in the postseason. But I think, you know, you look at it, and this team has got some really good depth, but there's a lot of experience inside that room, and I don't know if there's any other guy that kind of really separates himself from the way that he's played during the regular season into the postseason, other than maybe Brian Bickell and Andrew Shaw is that other type of guy that, plays a really good playoff-type style hockey.
Okay, the other guy I was thinking was the Jay Pandolfo syndrome. That's the guy. He'd always get about 5 goals, yeah, and then he'd get about 8 in 10 playoff games. Now, let's put all those playoff stats and Stanley Cups aside. I mean, this now, you're playing the Ilya Brzgalov, okay? Like I said, he's the NHL's version of rent-a-goalie. He's in Minnesota. He's winning playoff games, and you got a Wild team that last night, their grunts basically made the difference. And talk about the challenges against a team that's putting up a little bit more of a fight than a lot of people expected.
A little bit more than a lot of people expected. And, you know, the funny thing is if you watch that series against the Colorado Avalanche, I mean, Minnesota was really good, and they were really determined not to go away in that series. And it wasn't that Colorado played poorly. I mean, they played extremely well, and Minnesota just would not go away. And, you know, you look at the first 2 games in this series, basically, it was a tie hockey game in both of those games early on. It was 2-2, a minute and a half into the one period, or 4 minutes into the third period in one game, 2-1, going up before Blackhawks found some separation in those 2 games. So Minnesota really, you know, I think has a lot of confidence right now in the way that they're playing. They can lean back on the experience because they don't have a lot of experience inside the locker room of past seasons in the postseason, the playoffs. But what they do have is the belief that recently we came back from a 2-game deficit against a team that was supposed to walk all over us. You know, we came back in game 7 4 times with 1 goal deficits and won it in overtime. So they've really got a strong belief. And they were the better team on the ice last night. And, you know, they make no bones about it. They outplayed the Blackhawks by a wide margin. You know, Brzgalov had to come up with a couple big saves. And anytime you do have, you know, firepower in the lineup like the Blackhawks can do, you make one little small mistake and you can capitalize on that. But that team is playing extremely well. And, you know, now you're in the best of the 3 situation. Minnesota's got all the confidence in the world. They've got a belief that they've got a system that can shut down the Blackhawks' high-powered offense. So it's really up to the Blackhawks now to turn the tables on Minnesota and try and take away the momentum here on home ice, which has been good for the Blackhawks, good for Minnesota in the postseason, the road, not so much on both sides.
Trey, I got one question. What do you think you can put your finger on when we played back in the day when you had a 4-1 lead? You would put the clamps on and you would win the game 4-1.
I know where you're going with this.
I'm baffled by the way, and it's amazing for hockey. I love the fact that these comebacks can happen. But as a player, I look at it and I say, how do you have a 4-1 lead and implode like you do as a team? I don't know if give me your perspective on it.
You know what? I don't know. I actually asked Mike Yeo at the beginning of the playoffs, and we just had a conversation off the cuff, and I said, I can't believe how many times in this playoffs teams have blown significant leads. It used to be, as you said, man, if you had a one-goal lead, I mean, that was tough to come back from.
Yeah.
If you had a 2-goal lead, or heaven forbid you had a 3-goal lead, that game was so far over and done with. You were moving on to the next game already, and you were trying to set the tone for the next game. It has been incredible what has happened this year in the playoffs. The first 2 games between St. Louis and the Blackhawks, minute 45 and 6.4 seconds, you know, they come back and score, and then they win in overtime in both of those games. How many times have we seen it in the playoffs this year? And I look at this, and I'm going, if everybody's seeing the trend of what's going on here, are they sitting back? Is it something that mentally you just don't want to get caught in? And I know, you know, stay on the right side of the puck. You know, make sure that you advance the pucks in the right areas. You know, don't have any turnovers and stuff like that. But to me, there's just no rhyme or reason for what is going on right now in the National Hockey League for these teams to be able to come back from these deficits late in hockey games. It's just incredible. And, you know, I look at it, and I know there is one trend. And the one trend is, okay, short shifts. If you get to the red line, make sure you dump it in, get off, and get on to, you know, another line change. Well, when you do that, what happens is you allow the other team a clean exit out of their own zone. So they usually get to the red line, dump it back in, you spend another 30 seconds inside your own zone, you get it out to the red line, you dump it in, you go off in a line change. So you lose that forecheck presence and basically entirely in the game. And I think you should try and stick with what has been successful up to that point. But I think it's just human nature in the game right now to sit back and not be as aggressive and do the things that you have done to put yourself in that lead, because it's just been amazing. And I don't think there's really something set in stone. I don't think coaches say, okay, listen, we're just going to sit back and do a trap here and we're going to try and bail ourselves out of our own end for the next 15 minutes. I don't know what's going on. There's no explanation.
I'm just glad there's another player that doesn't have a clue like me, because I was starting to wonder.
I can't explain it. Well, I mean, I really can't explain it.
Okay, you know something? You and Brian Muir, you can talk about blown leads all you want. All I know is, as I sit here with this heavy heart, 1989, our Toronto Maple Leafs had a two-goal lead in Game 80 against the Chicago Blackhawks, and a guy named, they came back, tied it, and a guy named Troy Murray scored in overtime to end the brief and meteoric career of Gord Stellick as general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I know all about blowing leads, Troy Murray.
You know, the funny thing was, Gord, we've talked about this before, but I was such in the doghouse with Mike Keenan that year that I was actually playing on a line with Bobby Bassam and Keith Brown, who was a defenseman playing wing, and we just happened to be on the ice when I scored that goal. But other than that, I was in the doghouse.
Well, if you're trying to make me feel any better, you're not. Yeah, your career counseling career is stick to the broadcast, okay?
Yeah, there's no comeback anytime soon. So. Yeah.
Hey, thanks very much as always, and we continue to enjoy the series. Always appreciate your time, Troy.
All right, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Troy.
Troy Murray, color analyst for the Chicago Blackhawks. We come back. We've got a break to take. We'll talk. We'll count down tonight's game between the Boston Bruins, Montreal Canadiens. You're listening to Hockey Central Saturday with Gord Stellick, Brian Muir on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The Fan on Demand.
Hockey Central Saturday, Gord Stellick, Brian Muir with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network, talking about the Stanley Cup playoff action continues. Four series going on, two games tonight. We covered the Anaheim Ducks, Los Angeles Kings to a big extent. Mike Feuda joined us from the Los Angeles Kings. Boston, Montreal will be the first game, what, about 17 minutes? Puck drop there, and it was interesting. Game number four, let me get the stat right. So the Montreal Canadiens had never lost a series when they've been up 3-1, if I got it right, and the Boston Bruins had never come back, or game four to make it 3-1. If they won a game to make it 3-1, game number four, and the Boston Bruins, if game four was made it 3-1 against them, they never won a series. So of all things, the guy that scores could be, and he came in the Dallas trade as well. He came in the Louis Erickson trade as well.
Yeah.
Big goal, but that could be. Now, for the Montreal Canadiens, what's the key to try to get that momentum back?
Well, it's interesting because they played a pretty solid game. I was at the game, and it was a real chess match between those two teams. And I think that they really need to expose the Boston Bruins with their speed. And I think they've kind of gone in a step in the right direction. I think Briere is going to be a healthy scratch tonight, and Prest is in. And I think they're looking for some physical presence from him. So getting the pucks to the net, we know that the goals aren't going to be pretty. I don't think both these goalies are playing pretty well. And I think the first goal is a very important one in this next game.
Yeah, fun. Danny Briere is in the pregame warm-up. They dress more guys, but there is talk that Brandon Prust could be in, and Danny Briere being a healthy scratch. And it's interesting, one, when you joined us a number of months ago, these big compliance buyouts, and Danny Briere being one of them, at least to the Montreal Canadiens' credit, they got him short-term, 2 years. Vinny LeCavalier was one from the word go. You didn't like the fit in Philadelphia.
Yeah, Vinny did pretty well, but I just think that to pay him what you do after that.
And the term as well.
The term is very long. And I look at this and I see this now, and I watch these guys play at 34, 35 years old. It is so difficult to play in this game now at this speed and at this level. You look at what Timo's doing, and I'm amazed that he can still do it as he does. And maybe these guys are going to have some years ahead of them, but I just don't see it getting better from here.
Well, and of course, Philadelphia Flyers eliminated that way, but you talked about him earlier on. And the Montreal Canadiens, I was looking as well that I've been very impressed how they've rolled four lines, because that's not their game. The Boston Bruins do it better than anybody in the Eastern Conference. But I still think, okay, if you're going to get into that, they just showed the other night the Bruins put on their fourth line and get the overtime goal, that whether it's P.K. Subban, whoever it's going to be, your stars have to be your stars. I mean, P.K.'s done it, but those are the guys have to rise up now, and what's the best two out of three?
Yeah, it's like you said, the stars have to be stars, and I think this is where guys differentiate themselves. We talked about those players that can elevate their game.
take a game on their shoulders, score a big goal at the right time. And I mean, PK is playing, he's playing unbelievable. I watched that game, and him and Price are two stalwarts with Montreal. And I look at Boston, and they've been kind of mediocre. And you look at Chara and Bergeron and these guys and Lucic, that they need to be big stars, and they're not doing it. They're really not doing what they need to do. So it'll be interesting if those guys can step up and be those players that they need.
It was, last Saturday as well, Montreal fans, and a lot of, we were talking to Troy Murray earlier, and it has been fascinating about, I can remember playoffs where the first goal was it, and that was it. And like you say, this has been the year of two goalies, three goalies, don't matter.
We'll call it the year of the comeback.
Year of the comeback, and certainly Montreal fans that kidded or chided Toronto Maple Leaf fans about the three-goal lead that they blew against the Boston Bruins. It was only two, but got a taste of it last Saturday. That's the relentlessness that way about the Boston Bruins. Certainly is unparalleled by any Eastern Conference team.
I think it goes back to the belief that you can actually do it. I mean, Troy alluded to it when we were speaking earlier, is that you believe you can do it, you go out and do it, and it happens. And granted, it's not going to happen every time. You watch what Patrick did with Colorado and pulling the goalie real early with 3 or 4 minutes to go, 2 or 3 minutes to go, and they end up winning, and then they chide him for the next time for doing it. Well, you have to win that game. So it's interesting to see the way these teams do it, and you give your players that belief when that happens and you do win it, and then all of a sudden now the momentum starts shifting and you say, you know what, we can do this. Go out and score a goal, and it happens, and then you just start rolling, and you score a couple, and you win the game.
You know, watching it last night, I think I'm getting the night right. It was 5-1, right, for the Rangers last night. Yeah. So Bruce Boudreau pays tribute to Patrick, and here they are earlier on. They had the glass-pushing episode to start the season, but they come back, get two goals against the Dallas Stars, the Anaheim Ducks do, and Bruce Boudreau's honest, says, I got to give Patrick Waugh credit because nobody ever pulled the goaltenders as early as he did. Here I did it, and we happened to score twice. And then you see last night the Rangers have that 4-1 lead over Pittsburgh, and they pull Fleury, like with, 4 minutes left, whatever it may be, and they actually played well for a while.
I don't understand what is so novel about this idea. Like, Patrick's brought this to the forefront of doing this. Well, you're in the playoffs, you lose, you're done. So give yourself a fighting chance. So what if you lose 6-1? It doesn't matter at that point. Give yourself a fighting chance to do it. And I mean, kudos to Patrick for bringing it to the league and all these other coaches. I don't want to say you're dumb for not realizing this, but I've had other coaches pull at 4 minutes, say, we got to win this game. It's in the playoffs. Let's go. Give yourselves a chance. Six guys on the ice. So, I mean, it's interesting to hear these guys say it's a novel thing and I didn't think to do it, but, good for Patrick.
Well, now, during the season, if you have a 3-goal lead, you become concerned about the perception goals against you to care. Do you think more teams will start doing a 3-goal lead, like five minutes left with a 3-goal lead, and then seeing if they get the fourth? Or do you think it's that just kind of a novelty?
Maybe it's like anything else. It's kind of you follow the herd, you do what everyone else does, and people start believing that you can actually come back and do it. I think people are going to do it more often than not now, and the goals against aren't really going to matter.
Just one quick last one, because it was a few weeks ago. I haven't talked to you about Patrick Waugh, Joe Sakic, big splash in Colorado, and that's what everyone hopes will happen. So Brendan Shanahan with the Toronto Maple Leafs. What did you think when he, from one day, was not known, not associated with the Leafs, and then the next day he is the face? He is the face of the organization, and everyone asks questions, and it's tough to give a great answer because he's just a guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I look at what Stevie Yzerman has done with Tampa and his track record with Team Canada, and I've got the utmost respect for him as a kind of a general manager and an organizer of a team. So for Shanny to come in and do this from his role that he had with the league, it's going to be interesting to see, the learning curve for him. I think it's going to be steep. It's going to be difficult here in Toronto, but I think he's got some good pieces to the puzzle that are set in place. And it's a matter of kind of organizing the next ones that come in order to get them to fall in and make it fit. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do. And I think the power that he gets is also going to be important, whether he has complete full reign or whether there's some other people pulling the strings.
Well, and the one last one, Canada came back, won to beat Slovakia today. I always give guys credit to go over there and play because it's a negative or it's an unfortunate situation when you have what happened yesterday. I mean, James Reimer, he needs to lose like to France, like a hole in the head.
Yeah.
Okay, about the kind of season he has. So he's in goal for Team Canada. It was a strange one to lose. It's not an elimination game. Yeah. And maybe get some set for a tournament that's got a little bit of bite and intrigue kind of a consolation for guys that don't make it in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You always, to wear that crest, Team Canada crest on your chest and go represent your country. I was fortunate enough to do it with the national team and never at the end of my playoffs that I never got to go. But I would always be honored to do it. And those guys, they need to respect that jersey and that crest and go out and play the best that they can. And I think, yeah, it was an unfortunate incident that they lost to France. And poor Rhymes is, I can't imagine what's going through his head and saying, come on, guys, we gotta get a couple goals. But it was nice to see them rebound. And my boy Joel scored a couple goals. So it's nice, the Toronto boy, and representing.
Yeah, Joel Ward gets a couple today as they come. They beat Slovakia. Tell you, Brian, been a pleasure. I know we catch up from time to time. Yeah. So you're going to sit back and enjoy the hockey. But thanks very much for joining us a couple, 2 hours.
Thank you to all the mums. Happy Mother's Day.
That's right. Happy Mother's Day tomorrow. That's for sure. And certainly with, as we chat with Larry Brooks, I'm a Martin St. Louis situation, probably a time to give a lot of thought about it to the great mums out there,
give
the hockey
mums.
That's for sure. Well, NHL hockey coming up. Montreal Canadiens taking on the Boston Bruins. Ducks taking on the LA Kings right after that. Enjoy the playoff hockey tonight. Thanks very much for joining this afternoon. You've been listening to Hockey Central Saturday. Gord Stellick, Ryan Muir on the Sportsnet Radio Network.